You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I talked to Lena Henry, lecturer at University of Auckland, about whenua and its place in the context of urban planning, development and design, and how it differs significantly from the colonial view of land as property. We also then discussed the implications of these differences on Aotearoa.
Tēnā rā koutou katoa. Ko te maua, te maunga, ko mahuru ro, te awa, ko piki te aroha, te marae, no te hokianga hau, ko Lena Henry tōku ingoa. Tēnā koutou katoa.
We'll just talk about kind of the differences in New Zealand perspectives on land and whenua and how that affects kind of the urban design process and how not just our urban design process but also how we work together as people and what that means.
So I've been a planner since, well, I graduated in 2000 as an undergrad with a Bachelor of Planning. But what actually brought me to planning or urban planning was my experience as a young person who was part of, well, witness and a witness as a teenager to some discussions between elders of Ngāpuhi living in Tāmaki Makaurau here. And the discussion was about establishing a marae within Auckland for people travelling from other areas and on their way home back up to the Hokianga and further abroad. So through that process, the proposal, the application to establish a marae was declined. And I knew all the work and the discussions and the issues surrounding the establishment of the marae. And I guess I was shocked at the time to understand that here are these, what seemed to me, young people talking to my elders and saying, actually, you cannot build a marae here. That was my first encounter with a planner. And what I soon realised is the power that urban planners have and how they get to determine what can occur in a place or area. So I just really wanted to share that with you in terms of talking about the way in which our legislation and our planning practice impacts on land management. So Māori have a customary tenure system that was developed over centuries. And then we have the establishment of the, well, what was imported here from the UK system, established through legislation in the 1840s. So when we talk about a New Zealand planning system, we're primarily still talking about what's presented through the state. So state planning has it ignored largely and marginalised Māori customary planning up until the 1970s. And by that time, the taking of land through legislation had a tremendous impact on Māori, and this is seen in the land marches, etc., of the 1970s. So by that time, we only had 7% of the land mass of Aotearoa New Zealand still within Māori hands. So that's really where we've got to start the conversation, is to say there's an Indigenous planning system, and now we've got this. Then we had the state enforce its legislation, and we're at this place in time.
You mentioned the customary tenure. What other kind of tenants would you say, not exclusive, but are the main elements of Māori or Indigenous planning?
Okay, so there's many dimensions to Māori planning, and I talk about planning for future generations on the concept of mokopuna, and looking forward to, I guess, planning with the having in mind through planning discussions what type of place would we like to leave for our mokopuna. Not the ones just that we might meet in our lifetime, but at least four generations ahead. And that's one dimension. The other is about how we see time. We talk about ingarā o mua, so the days in front. We talk about the past and future differently. So everything in the past is validated and relevant and expected to be discussed in terms of looking at what we should be doing in the future. Whereas planning in its nature is, I guess, an orthodox European approach to planning, is that you're always looking into the future, and it can be quite utopian. It can be dismissive of what's ever happened in the past. So these are key differences between a Māori customary system and a European dominated framework.
Do you think bringing the kind of European framework to New Zealand is kind of complete evidence of that in terms of they brought potentially, in my opinion, what I would label a not particularly well thought out or not particularly well working system to New Zealand and expected it to kind of work without recognising what had happened in the past, especially in England.
Well, it's interesting in that the treaty does actually say in the preamble and discussions previous to that all talked about a peaceful settlement. And Māori were generous, where there was contact, were generous about having this responsibility of manaaki, having been true to themselves as rangatira, as chief, as I guess the host of their own tribal domains. And so when we talk about, you know, the intent, if we look at the treaty, actually, Māori and the chiefs that signed the treaty and Te Tiriti o Waitangi were okay with it. Initial attempt, but it was actually after that where I guess different players and significant policies around assimilation, around, you know, the taking of land, etc., and speculators, etc., and their agendas that really saw the demise of Māori ownership and authority.
I think a lot of people kind of see the issue with the treaty as exclusively a translation issue, whereas perhaps it's kind of a misrepresentation of cultural values as well. Do you think that that is reflected in planning in terms of how European or a colonial culture value a certain thing versus how the Māori indigenous culture value a certain thing, for example, land or whenua or rivers or waiora?
In my earlier years, I did actually interpret the activities and the ignorance and the domination of non-Māori, and in particular the state, as being probably that what you just explained. But what I have learnt over time, and in particular through the teachings of Moana Jackson, he talked about, you know, that people have different associations with land. People can, you know, Pākehā New Zealand has associations with land and they have many generations themselves have been connected to place. But it just comes from a different place. So Māori have these connections that are both spiritual, genealogical, ancestral, and that's what, coupled with our cultural framework, which talks about rangatiratanga, kaitiakitanga, all of those Māori values that are implicit in how we manage land. And so it's neither one is better than the other, but the connection to land, more than a commodity, is the important part that we share, that we need to share.
What kind of importance do you think having a connection to the land plays when developing that land for the future?
I think in this day and age, we're really seeing a generation of people who are more conscious about these relationships between land and whenua and the reciprocity that needs to exist between us and our environment, as opposed to the industrial era where we're just looking for productivity and all of those types of capitalist values. So it is about continuing to raise our own consciousness and redirecting what is it that we searching for. So what are our real aspirations in terms of, I guess, in the agenda that's common today is sustainability. And for Māori, we'll continue to talk about kaitiakitanga. They're not the same, but I think that there's some shared common interests, you know, based on that.
We've kind of mentioned that there's two separate models of planning. Neither is better than the other necessarily. However, they've just got different values and come from different places. Well, what do you think the best way to combine or move forward with both of those models is?
Well, actually, I would say Māori, because I know it more and I understand it at a deeper level, is probably the better model.
I would agree.
Well, it is the better model, and we have much to learn about that because there's so much information, knowledge that has yet to be revealed into the public arena around those connections and the place names, etc. I am familiar with in terms of how do we work together in these two systems, and familiar with Hirini Mātunga's work around dual planning and developing a dual planning system within Aotearoa that takes into account the traditions of the UK system that was imported here, as well as acknowledging and really taking on board the Indigenous planning system that we have here through Māori history and heritage, and trying to develop a unique planning system for Aotearoa New Zealand in our 21st century. I think what's important is that only Māori can truly be take on a particular role around the Māori planning system and as kaitiaki. That doesn't mean that non-Māori don't have a role, but it's having that discussion around how do we take really genuine steps towards developing and evolving a system here in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
What would that ideal system look like?
Well, we've got many examples, but one that comes to mind just now is the being in Tāmaki Makaurau and the recent issue around Cody Dieback, where we have the iwi of Tāmaki talking about concerns around the Cody Dieback and what's happening to, in this particular case, Waitakere Rangers. So what happened there is that they just asserted their rangatiratanga and established a rāhui, and then local government had to respond. Then central government had to respond, and the only response was to support. So that's one example. So if we can continue to marry up the two authorities that exist within Auckland in this case, but all over the motu, where we have local authorities working with iwi to address these types of issues.
What do you most appreciate about whenua or land in Tāmaki Makaurau or Auckland or New Zealand?
So actually what I appreciate about whenua is, and I come from a point of view that my father, he's passed away now, but what I gathered from him is what occurs when you're landless. So my mother's from Ngāti Hine, my father's from Hokianga, and so my father, watching him and you know, as a child, he was always in pursuit of land. He wasn't wealthy, but that experience of seeing what it how it makes my father feel, being landless, really has probably had an impact on me in terms of my understanding of whenua. By the time I come along, and my grandmother was still around, and she has a small block of land, and my dad has about 21 siblings, and to share this one little block, it was shared while she was around, but due to the individualisation of land ownership, you know, my father was the youngest, and he didn't inherit any land. And so understanding that experience, it's hard to talk about, but that's a legacy that I've taken on with my from my father. My mother, she's got land and she's okay, but I get the feeling for land and what it means by what I've seen in terms of the impact on my father having no land.
Do you think our relationship with the land is reflective of our relationship with others?
Oh, look, that's really an important issue to raise. And of course, we're talking about land as communal as opposed to my, you know, individual residency here in Auckland. And what it enables when you do have this communal ownership of land or connection to land, you have people who can stand in their own tūranga waiwai or stand in their own identity, and the generosity that can be expressed. So we have different districts which are not well known for particular resources, and you'll see the abundance of that or not when you are a visitor. So all of those values start to be expressed, and they can best be expressed when the tribal estate is healthy and the land is in a state of Māori order. So of course there's a lot to learn from being able to share from your own estate. And what we see with when we're landless is the loss of kinship ties, the whanaungatanga that exists from hapu solidarity or whānau solidarity of this taonga whenua, and everything that's lost after that. So a lack of ability to fully express rangatiratanga, to really make decisions and to be accountable for those decisions, the ability to host people, the ability to express manaakitanga, the ability to see natural wildlife in your own tribal tohe and the mātauranga that grows with that. So the knowledge about the environment and the natural environment grows from that.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.